Hello, everyone. Welcome to Hope, Heal, Recover, a podcast brought to you by IBH Addiction Recovery. I'm your host, Jonathan Wiley. In our first season, Stories of Substance, we explore the field of drug and alcohol addiction treatment from the perspective of the professionals who provide the life-saving programs that make recovery possible. Today, we have with us JT Warmus, who is one of our counselors here at IBH Addiction Recovery. JT, thanks for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You know, for those of you who don't know, we have a handful of counselors who do a great job with our clients, and they're on the front lines, really. They're the ones that provide majority of the programming for our clients and help them achieve their goals and their recovery. We're really glad you could be here with us. You know, the purpose of this first season is really to try to get folks to understand what it is we do here, and what it's like to have a career in behavioral health and specifically addictions field. So it's not a job interview, but maybe you could just kind of tell us a little bit about how you got here, or how did you arrive at this as a career choice for you?
I often think that it's not really a choice. It's more of a calling, at least for the counseling field. There's many bridges that you cross along the way that kind of guide you towards that endpoint. And, you know, I started out in construction, a family business, got my degree in construction management, worked my way up through labor, and, you know, I ran some job sites, superintendent. That was good work, but it wasn't feeding my soul, so to speak. It was a job, and I wanted something a little bit more, and that's when I decided. I had gone to my own counseling throughout the years. There was a bit of a family crisis that got me involved with counseling, and felt like this was a nice space, you know, to have these honest, you know, communications with someone, to really meet someone, to really share the struggles of life, which I felt were always hidden, always held back from the forefront. So counseling, I decided that I was going to give it a shot, and I went back to school, got my master's, and did my internship here, and wound up staying and loving it.
When I talk to folks and say what kind of field I'm in and what we do, they don't really know what treatment is. In your own words, what is it that you and your colleagues do for and with the clients that is the treatment? A lot of people think, well, what do you take them into a room and do something with them? And it's counseling. But beyond just saying counseling, what is it? What is the approach you take and your colleagues take with the clients in terms of what is treatment?
Well, I can only speak for myself. I mean, treatment here is broad. You know, we have the education, we have the spiritual, we have the group counseling, and we have the individual counseling. You know, so I'll only speak for what I know, because I don't see how other counselors do their individual. I've sat in on a handful of group counselings, and I've sat in a lot of education, which was critical in my growth here. For me, I try to meet someone. In the simplest words possible, I try to meet them in the here and now, try to extend some sort of bridge towards them to connect. And through that connection, hopefully there's some healing that takes place. Because, yes, we can give techniques, we can give information, education, but the modality is a relationship. So I try to use the relationship as much as possible to create healing, because I think that we as social creatures thrive when we are understood, and when we are valued, when we are heard, and when we are supported.
When you say the counseling part, you know, mm-hmm. we hear a lot about cognitive thinking and things like that. Can you go a little deeper as to what that means in terms of, you know, when you're working with a client, how are you giving them those tools? What's the best way? You know, you develop the relationship. So how are you communicating what it is that they can take with them once they leave here to help sustain their recovery?
Well, I think a lot of that takes place on a much deeper level than it just, this is ABC, you know, like right. The cognitive model. Probably talking to the wrong counselor for the tools. I'm much more interested in what I'm noticing here and now, because the way that you will interact with me is probably how you will interact with other people, and kind of some of those blockages, some of those blind spots, try to bring an attention to them. I'm a big fan of, body language, reading people, tonalities, things like that. So in any given session, I'll ask them, how are they experiencing, the session here today? Like, what is it? I'm noticing this in you. Is there a specific reason? And there's a saying that wherever there's resistance, there's something behind that. So I try to be mindful of what's being resisted while also being, appropriate and not intellectually taking advantage of this person, just because the position that I'm in to, I was going to use a much worse word, but, just to take advantage in terms of intellectual, property of theirs.
You brought up something interesting in that counselors have different approaches and maybe different favorite techniques. Can you tell when you sit down with a client whether you're going to be a good fit for them and they with you in terms of your style, or is it something that you just learn to adapt to each individual client? Or do you guys actually talk about, when I say you guys, the counselors, do you talk about, well, I've got a client who I think might be better with you? Does that kind of conversation occur, or how do you handle that?
To go back to the first question, it's just like any other personality. Sometimes you vibe easier, sometimes you don't. That doesn't mean that there isn't value to be gained from the counseling relationship. Sometimes you need to have that person that's a little more challenging. You're not looking for a friend, you're looking for a counselor. You definitely want to be comfortable. Clients sometimes get frustrated with me because I'm non-directive. I think sometimes there's this past experience in counseling where they, A, B, C, I say these things, you tell me good job, we kind of move on. But I'm not as interested in that. I'm more interested in who they are. I'm interested in what makes them angry. They're sometimes reluctant to share that anger because they think they'll be extended, or there'll be a bad review. Whether or not someone will fit better, I always think that everyone has their skills, so everyone will benefit. Maybe in groups we can send them to certain group counselors, or with the spirituality we can send them to a certain clinician.
Yeah.
But we have such little time with them here in residential, we kind of got to make do with who we get.
Right.
If a client puts in a request, then we will transfer them.
And that's a good point to let our listeners know. We provide all types of care at IBH, but you work in the residential, the highest level of care. And we're responsible for these clients 24/7. And we don't get to keep them as long as we'd probably like to in many situations. And that has more to do with the payers than it does necessarily with the clinical judgment. That is not, I think our average length of stay for a successful client is somewhere, 50 days or maybe a little bit more. In the old days, when I first got here, everyone told me about, well, we used to have a 90-day model. And I'm like, well, how do you know 90 days is the right amount of time either? Mm-hmm. It might be 30, it might be 120, it might be 60. Mm-hmm. So we don't really manage to the number of days as much as the level of care they need and the progress they're making. But I'm sure there's many clients you probably work with that you wish you could have another 2 weeks with, or another 3 weeks with.
Another 2 years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And luckily we have, at IBH, we have outpatient counseling now, mm-hmm. Which we haven't always had. And so at least we can refer them on to that. Whether it's, I don't know if you work with the PHP clients as well as the 3.5 clients, or just...
Correct, yes. The residential residential team works with them through PHP.
Yeah.
But I also, I run the PHP group. So,
okay.
I'll see a lot of those clients
right.
through that program.
So, again, just for our listeners, clients may start here at the 3.5 level of care, which is saying 24/7 residential supervision, mm-hmm. and step down to it's called partial hospitalization, but it's basically just day treatment where they are in programming less hours per week than they would be under the stricter residential program. If you don't mind, without revealing identities, obviously, can you share with us maybe one or two success stories you've had with a client in terms of how they walked in the door versus how they walked out and the progress that you were able to observe and be with them? Is there a favorite story or theme that you would want to share with folks?
Not a favorite. There's been a lot of clients that have come in that I've worked with that you've just seen the growth day by day. So to say that, you know, they got the 1 year coin, to me, doesn't mean as much as like last week they were freaking out. You process something with them and then this week they're less triggered by that. I can go back though to one of my first clients. I think it was my second client during my internship. Comes in, IV user for probably about 15 to 20 years, track marks up and down his arm, can't sit still, you know, and it was just just like, you know, I'm going to really try to meet this client. But in the back of your head, you're thinking, what are the chances that this can be a success? You know, this is pretty severe and this is pretty deep into his addiction. And day by day, week by week, we saw some progress. And, you know, that was one of the ones that you heard, the 1 year chip. And it was funny too, because he gave me some feedback towards the end that he was really happy that he had a amateur, because he felt like that was in the Buddhist saying, that was like a beginner's mind type moment. Mm-hmm. So you try to keep that perspective that having the answers isn't always the best thing. Being willing to explore things with an open mind with the client, at least in that particular case, provided some healing, some growth.
It's got to be equally frustrating and rewarding with our clientele. I mean, you have folks that may leave before we want them to, or get administratively discharged, and then you have those who, you know, they work the program and they work with you and they leave here on a good track. That's hard work. You know, we talk about that a lot. It's the work you guys do as counselors, all of us, but especially the counselors, has to be really difficult work in terms of, you know, that success, and then having some folks who aren't successful and trying to break through with them. What are some of the things that you do as a counselor to keep your own, you know, health in check, your own mental health, your own well-being? What do you do to take care of yourself?
Well, first of all, I don't get invested in the results of the clients, so to speak. Maybe it's part of their path, maybe part of their journey. There's a saying I always like, kindly let me save you from drowning, said the monkey putting the fish into the tree. So, you know, just to presume that I know what's best for the client and their path and their journey, I think leads to discontentment, because then I'll start playing God with my clients. So perspective for me, taking a step back, realizing that the counselor, I'm just supposed to walk with them. I'm not supposed to lead them, so to speak. I am supposed to be there as a resource. But my days start early, to get back into the nuts and bolts of it. You know, I wake up really early. I work out. I walk my dogs. I prepare my meals for the day. I do things for me first. And that allows me to be fully present for my clients whenever I get to them. So I always say that if I don't do something for me, because I'm a selfish being, you know, I can't just give myself away all the time. So I do something for me first. And then by that time, I'm wanting to give to my clients. So it actually, they end up helping me, because the next part of my day, I want to be service oriented, and my clients allow me to provide that, or hopefully they do.
Yeah. So as this season of podcasts is really trying to focus in on what it's like to work in this field, what advice, if there's somebody, a JT out there right now, who's considering whether it's to go into behavioral health or you know, what kind of counseling they want to do, and to go into counseling at all, or maybe they were working in the construction business or something totally different, what advice would you give somebody who's considering working in this field? What would you want them to know about the field and about the work that makes it worth their time to invest in it?
Well, you hit me there with a question. I don't like advice. So, yeah, in terms of advice, I don't know if I would give any, but I would try to listen to them and listen to their reasons for why they would want to pursue that. And then I could maybe allow them to learn from some of my experiences with some of those parts of that journey. You know, but I think the answer you're looking for is, I would just let them know that if it's what you want to do, it's worth every bit of it.
One of the things that we've focused on in the last couple of years is we have the client here and we're helping them. And there are other people involved in each of these situations, the loved ones, the support system for that client who's in here in treatment. What, and I know you don't like the word advice, so mm-hmm. let me see if how I can ask this in a different way. But, you know, what do you want family members, loved ones, support system of those who are in the throes of addiction? What do you want them to know about their loved one as they're in treatment? Or what do you want them to know about the disease? I think there's a lot of folks who just struggle with, they want to help. They want to help the situation. They want to help the person who needs the treatment, but they don't know how. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they overstretch or have unrealistic expectations about what they can do to help the situation. Have you had, you know, experience coaching those types of folks who are involved with the client but not aren't necessarily in treatment themselves, the families or others?
Yeah, I have had some interaction. We do family sessions from time to time. I always recommend them to the clients as an option. You know, that if they're bringing up consistently issues that they're having with family, I allow them or I let them know that service is available. We also used to run a family education. I think they still do it, but I'm no longer involved with it. So you would meet the families, and our topic that at least I ran was boundaries and communication. But most of the time it turned into a group counseling session and just support through shared experiences with the family members. But it's heartbreaking to see because you see these families watching someone that they love die, and you can't really tell them, you know, like cut them off. You know, that's what's best for them, you know, because the amount of regret that they would carry. But they also at the same time can't keep doing what they're doing. So they're really, really stuck between a rock and a hard place. I guess with them, if there was advice, clear, consistent boundaries, just consistency, not changing or the goalpost, not moving the goalpost consistently.
One of the other things that we talked a little bit with Meredith about and others is, and I think at least what I'm being told is we're seeing an increase in the frequency and acuity, and I'd be curious to see what your opinion on this is, frequency and acuity of co-occurring mental health issues with the clients that we're seeing. What's your experience with that? Have you seen in your time, do many of your clients have co-occurring mental health issues? You know, you hear people talk about, well, of course they're depressed, they're addicted, but do they truly have a mental health issue, or is that being driven by their addiction issue, or is their addiction issue being driven by their mental health issue, and how do you address both at the same time effectively? Mm-hmm. What's your experience with that?
Well, I've just been here for 4 years. It's always seemed like the mental health has been pretty high since the time I've been here. You know, clients that are coming in on meth, some form of psychosis, seems pretty standard and normal with our clientele. In terms of distinguishing or pulling out which one came first, it really doesn't matter to me. Substance use disorders are in the DSM. They always try to recommend that you try to address the addiction first, because every single diagnosis says rule out addiction, you know, as the source of this issue. So I guess in terms of guidance, the question I guess is, what am I seeing it more?
Yeah, I mean, how are you seeing it more, and how, as counselors, do you guys deal with both of the issues, and what's the best approach, or is there not really one particular approach, but it depends on the client?
I think it depends on the client, but it doesn't really change my approach very much at all in terms of the short answer. They're all pretty severe in where they're at the time that they come into a residential facility. So compassion, understanding, you'll be amazed at how far that can bring someone along in terms of their mental health. Just a little bit of stability, a little bit of understanding, a little bit of good food, get some sleep in them, and you'll see miracles happen.
So JT, we talked about there's a team of you who treat the folks here, and we serve over 500 folks in residential and PHP services throughout the year. So obviously it takes a team. You want to talk a little bit about your colleagues and in the group of folks you work with?
Absolutely. No, I think that one of the common struggles that's been documented with counseling is, ironically, a feeling of isolation. You're with these clients, you create these boundaries, you're in a one-on-one session in a room. And, clinicians can become, separated. So one of the things I'm truly blessed with working here is a team of phenomenal people and gifted. I spent some time preparing for this podcast, and before I got the questions that were directed towards me from you, I just spent some time writing down about the people that I meet in a given day. And I don't think that I have enough time to go over these, and I don't know if I do.
You can go over as long as you want.
Okay. So I get in, and I counted, I think I have 35 names here. And these are people that I meet on a regular basis. So I get in the morning, I get in early around 6 o'clock, and I'm blessed that you guys have a flexible schedule. It's when I do my paperwork the best, But the clinical team starts rolling in. So I just want to give a shout out to all these people. And I truly apologize if I forget anybody here. I tried to be as comprehensive as possible. But, first person usually walks in is Libby. She gives me a very caring hello, good morning, every single day. She's compassionate. She's gifted. She's young, too. She's new in the field, and she's just killing it. Then usually Char rolls in. Char, her passion can fill, a stadium. And when I hear her say, I'm proud of you, to fellow client, or not to, to the clients, you feel it, and you feel that it's, very important to them. And you'll get feedback from the clients about what it means to them. Then Lizzie rolls in. She's the head of our spiritual care. She's a strong Southern Belle with grace in her heart, but she's no pushover. She can really hold
her
own.
That's right.
Yep. With these clients. Kathleen rolls in. She's so approachable, laid back, and always refreshing. Like when I leave a conversation with her, I always just feel like, that was like a 5-minute break.
So Kathleen's a case manager.
Kathleen's a case manager, yes, but right. She also runs PHP groups now.
Okay.
Yep,
okay.
And she was running a residential group for a while.
Okay.
Kyle, he darts in. I think Kyle. He's a case manager.
Sure.
Smart, driven, carries so many tasks, and he does that with ease. Also, his recovery knowledge is incredibly dense. Nicole, she's another counselor. I usually don't see her in the morning, but I'll see her sometime during the day.
Yeah.
So nice. Yeah. Logical, emotional. She balances emotional intelligence and logic really, really well. Kelly, she's on break right now. We really miss her presence,
yep,
but
yep.
She has an incredible attention to detail, phenomenal at diagnosis. Like if you want to put a clinical name on something, you go to her, and she can help you out with that. Teresa, man, she's the case client care advocate here. She does so much, and she cares, and she wants to share in your success. She wants to support your success. Keegan, he's an eclectic master, I call him. True natural in counseling. I hope he pursues this as a career further on in terms of licensure. Harry, he's working to balance the client care and the disease model with the clinical expectations, so there's a bit of a balancing act there. We just lost Sam, super intelligent clinician. He went on to get his PhD, and that's something that he should be doing right now. But it hurts. It hurt to lose him. Next thing I do is I go down to the education building. I think you had John on here before. He's brilliant in so many areas, truly connects with clients at their deepest levels. And he's a true friend of mine. I've gotten to know him over the years. Jamie, she is a fireball. Have you ever sat in one of her?
Yeah.
It can be a little bit jarring, but it's also, for the right taste. I think it's perfect. Ben, he's the coolest guy on campus, effortless, effective, you know, things like that. I also got to give a shout out to the OG of the education department. That was Michael Swartout.
Yeah.
You know, he really set a lot of things up. Another true friend, I consider. He makes time for me every day. He makes me laugh. The RS staff, you know, I'll run down to the house. Eddie loves my dog, Krish. Another shout out to working here on campus is that we get to have our dogs on Friday. So if you love dogs and you want to work in recovery, this is the place.
Saturday and Sunday too.
Yeah. TC, he gives me a little dap up. Marco, Chad, Tiffany, she's worked her way up throughout the years. Sarah, Karen, Paula, they're all phenomenal. You know, Paula's been here for what, 20 years now?
At least.
Yeah, and I always think that she has the clients in mind. Meredith, you know, she's my supervisor now, but she's a masterclass in emotional intelligence. Anytime you have a discussion with her, you're enlightened in kind of balancing the politics of this place with also the goal of counseling and helping. I want to give a shout out to my former supervisor during my internship, Emily. You know, I was blessed to have her knowledge and her patience as I kind of, you know, fumbled along in the beginning ways.
Yeah.
You know, I'll go through these quick now, but we got the maintenance team. I'll see Doug. He's super cool. You know, he's always giving you a hi, hello, how's it going? And he means it. He also offers you to, it's cherry tomatoes. He grows cherry tomatoes and he's more than happy to share.
Yeah.
We got Stefan, Zach, Marco, and Sandy. Sandy's kind of the first person that you see when
That's
you
right.
come in here. She's great. You know, and then just to go down, I think it's Amanda at the front desk here. She's always really nice to see, and she deals with a lot. We got Melissa Burgess, who handles all the paperwork things, and she does it with grace. Joanne, she's like a grandmother figure whenever she takes the clients in. And the last but not least that I have here, at least, is Matt Vance. You know, anytime I've had a problem, I've been able to go to him, and he's been really laid back and helpful.
And Matt's been on our show as well, right? I'm trying to remember now everyone who's been on the show. Well, JT, I appreciate you sharing that list, and I'm glad that you did, not just because it's who you or we get to work with every day, mm-hmm. but many of those folks that you mentioned there, our clients interact with on a regular basis as well. So I think it's a reflection of the culture we have here of teamwork in terms of those being your colleagues, but also when a client comes to IBH, they're not just having a relationship with one individual or a handful of it. They are surrounded by many different individuals who have many different roles in taking care of the clients, taking care of each other and the campus itself. So I hope folks can appreciate that, and I think they will now that they've heard the list that you put together, and I appreciate your thoughtfulness of doing that. We appreciate you being here. We appreciate the work you and your colleagues do. You know, we hope that you continue to find, you know, reward in being here and helping the clients. And, you know, we say it all the time, and, you know, we literally do save people's lives here. And you're a big part of that. And your teammates are a big part of that. And I hope that's rewarding for you and something that many people who work in different fields will never get to experience. And so I just hope everyone appreciates that. So thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.